We had a late start to today's shortened race, but the action certainly wasn't cut short. Welcome back to the Grid Talk podcast. This is episode 234, where we will review this year's Singapore Grand Prix. I'm your host, Tom Horrocks, and today I have the pleasure of being joined by Grid Talk's very own Owen Medford.
Hello.
And our co-host, Tom Downey.
Hello.
If you enjoyed this podcast, we would love it if you would stop the podcast right now and go and leave us a five-star review. It'll only take a couple of seconds to do, and it really helps us climb the rankings. You can do this on Spotify by just leaving us a ranking, or you can head to Apple Podcasts and leave us a five-star review. We will shout out everyone who does this as a comment on our next show. And if you do leave us a review, you'll automatically be entered into our monthly prize draw to win some fabulous Grid Talk merchandise. If you haven't done so already, why not subscribe to us on YouTube and click the bell to let us know when we are live like we are right now. We've got over 700 subscribers now, and we've got loads of video content and articles for you to get your teeth into as well. Please give us a thumbs up, share and comment, because we love hearing from you. And any questions you do ask during the stream, we will attempt to answer in our post show as well. But we're going to get straight into the action, and there was plenty of it, Owen. We've just had the Singapore Grand Prix, known for its lack of overtaking, but we certainly got some today. And for now, at least, a provisional winner, Sergio Perez, absolute solid performance, and the new Rainmaster, really, with two street track race wins so far this year.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, obviously, he mastered Monaco. And the same thing's come his way today. He kind of won the race at the start, and then you know, just kind of carried on. But it was obviously chased very, very hard by Charles Leclerc. But he put the car in all the right places. Didn't get flustered. Didn't make some of the errors that some of the others around him were making. And just sort of weathered the storm in more ways than one. And came out on top by the end, even showing that, by the end, obviously there is that slight point contention with the safety car. But responded when told to, push, because we might not be able to keep this one with where you are now. And opened up a 7.5 second gap, which based on precedent, seems like he should be able to keep the win. But it's like Perez from the start of the season had come back.
Absolutely, yeah. He seemed to look after the tyres a lot better than Leclerc did. And I think maybe, do you reckon, Tom, it was just Leclerc just burning his tyres out too quick and just taking too much life out of them?
Yeah, Leclerc's tyres and sort of like his pace in the last half dozen or so laps, he seemed to just absolutely fall off a cliff, because when he was first chasing Perez, he was like 4 tenths, 3 tenths, 5 tenths. He was always there or thereabouts. But the Ferrari, it was when he was coming out to turn three to sort of come through the turn four, five complex, turn six, and turn seven. When he was exiting like the first sort of sequence of turns, when he was exiting the first sort of sequence of turns, his car just. Leclerc now, his car just wasn't quite keeping up with what he was wanting it to do, and he was he just wasn't able to quite get enough speed going down the main straight, I think he just took too much out of his tires, and we know what Perez is like when he comes to protecting his tires anyway. So he just fell Perez's way, and I thought he was absolutely outstanding.
And just before we move on from the top two there, I'd like to ask you, Owen, as well. The obviously, he started on pole position, Leclerc, but had a bit of a bad start and a slow stop as well, costing him track position on Perez both times. Do you think that was crucial in the end, or was Perez always going to have the pace to win?
I'm in two minds on it in some ways. I think it's the first time in a while that, beyond the slow stop, obviously, that Ferrari hasn't done anything obviously wrong. But I think, it didn't seem like Perez was going flat out. It did seem like Perez was going flat out when he was defending against Leclerc. So I think the pace between them was always marginal. It would have been good to see Max up there. Max having a better race, actually, so we could compare better. But without that, I think. I think it's a bit of a toss of a coin, really. I think whoever got track position first was going to was going to take it. I think, well, it's just a case of, yeah, getting for the track position, not stuffing in a barrier, and just keeping it clean. And I think that's what Sergio did. I think that might have just made the difference.
Yeah, I think track position and equal machinery was kind of, it was going to lead to a very difficult situation to be, you know, to be able to make an overtake on track when you had equal machinery. You saw, as we'll talk about later, of Max Verstappen, he was able to make overtakes. But I, for one, I'm glad that he wasn't up there today, because it gave us some fresh faces up there and a different result. Carlos Sainz finishing third place, Tom. He fell away from Leclerc pretty much at every opportunity he had today. He was never really in the fight for the win, and looked at one point like he may have even fallen behind for fourth place. How do you rate his performance today?
Not great, if I'm honest. Given his teammate, who was in apparently identical machinery, was pushing by far and away the fastest car on track for the win, you would expect more, to be honest. I know that might seem a bit harsh, given he started fourth, finished third. And yeah, he did get past Hamilton at the start of the race. I think if that wouldn't have been the first lap pass, I think he'd have been certainly looked at by the stewards, because it was very brutal in the way he decided to just sort of punt Hamilton out of the way, should we say. Or maybe brutal's not the right word, but it was very sort of a boisterous. That's really the kind of word I'm looking for, if that makes sense. But yeah, no, Sainz, he just didn't have the pace. I don't know if it was because he's not as confident in these kind of wet, dry conditions, or if maybe he was taking a bit easy. Maybe he backed off a bit because he knew he wasn't going to be overtaking his teammate and catching him and burning his tyres and all the rest of it. And also because he could see that Hamilton at first, and then Norris was far enough back that they sort of just wound everything down, saved the engine, didn't want to make any stupid mistakes, and just brought it home a bit. There could have been an element of that. I don't know. I am speculating, obviously. So, you know, it was a bit like Pierre Gasly of last year, where he would do like a really good result and it would sort of just go unnoticed because of everything that was going around him.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that he just didn't, at no point in the race did you think he was going to take this by the scruff of the neck. He was one of the first people saying that he was going to be going to soft soon. And in reality, it was way, way too early. Looking back, if he'd have jumped then, he would have ended up probably in a similar position to where Russell ended up. So just kind of a bit of an anonymous performance for a car that, you know, should have been quite exciting on track. But somebody who was exciting on track definitely was my boy Lando Norris going long, lucked into the safety car. My favourite strategy on F1 Manager right now is just basically just go a little bit longer than everyone else and just hope for a safety car. And for once, it actually worked out. And really strong result today for Lando. And sorry, that goes to Owain.
Yeah, it's I like to call it the Renault 2008 strat. obviously, they didn't have to induce that one. But yeah, it was actually we didn't see a lot of Lando, apart from the restarts. And obviously, he did luck in a little bit to that. But to be honest, to pull it off, I would characterize today as full of sort of rookie errors, really. And just small little things. You know, we saw it so easy, even for people with, you know, bags of experience and talent beyond belief. To mess it up and to get round and not do that and not have issues like that and pretty much stay out of trouble. Helped by, you know, incidents affecting everyone else, but then again, so was everyone else. So, you know, it's a really good performance. It's going to really help McLaren in the constructors.
Yeah, I mean they're now ahead of Alpine in the Constructors' Championship, which we wouldn't have expected a few weeks ago, Tom. And one person who has really contributed to that for once is the man who started 16th and exited in Q1. Just how important is that performance for Ricciardo, or was it just down to luck of the draw, really?
No, I wouldn't say it was completely luck of the draw, because there were other teams and drivers, notably Haas, around him, who would have, you know, who had sort of fairly low starts and didn't finish in the points. So, you know, Danny Rick pitted for Soss, I believe, and when almost everyone else was on medium, so I can't remember who else was on Soss, maybe Gasly. And yeah, it was a bit of an inspired move. You know, he obviously felt confident enough. I mean, it's a great result for him personally, if, you know, for his morale. On a circuit which is not easy to drive on, let's add, you know, this is a, you know, both in terms of, you know, 23 corners, the longest race in terms of time per lap on the calendar, and one of the most physically and arguably mentally demanding circuits there. You know, because obviously the humidity and the temperature, the late night, the delayed start this weekend. You know, Danny Rick fighting for his, well, you could say fighting for his F1 future, because who knows if he's even going to be on the grid next year. And it was, it was just a bit of an inspired race from him today. You know, quali was quali, but ultimately, you know, he finished in the points in a decent points finishing position as well. So that's great for McLaren. You know, he finished along, you know, more or less, you know, alongside his teammate. It's great for McLaren, especially as both Alpines went full Française and DNF'd and blew up. And yeah, it's good for that battle for fourth. It's good for Danny Rick. It's good for Lando. But yeah, just all round positive vibes this week. I never thought, oh, why did I say that? I hate that phrase. But that's the most hipster thing I've ever said. But yeah, but all in all, it's good for morale at Woking.
Yeah, it's a solid performance and really giving them a springboard now to try and push on for the rest of the season. It was, you know, given that they have kind of turned development off on this, it's given them something to hold on to now. It's just 4 points and Alpine still do have the quicker car, but they've got something now to fight for at least anyway. And another race like that in the closing stages, and who knows, they might well be able to hold on to that fourth place. I'm talking, you know, from a completely unbiased point of view, and I'm definitely not wearing a Lando Norris t-shirt right now. But moving on to sixth place, Lance Stroll really putting those extra budget cap bucks to good use today. A cracking race, really, from Aston Martin, and allegedly, by the way, on that previous comment, and really just keeping his nose clean with both Aston Martins, really, and sixth place, a solid return for Stroll, though, Wayne.
Yeah, he started in 11th place as well. You know, it wasn't. I don't think he did anything particularly amazing. But then again, we saw arguably more talented drivers, you know, shove it in the wall or things like that, or get caught up. You know, I think he did a fairly good job. You know, he wasn't, obviously he's not lighting up the timing screens or anything like that, but he was still, you know, it would have been easy, I think, to get caught up and throw that kind of points finish away, and he didn't. We didn't see a lot of him, but I think that was a testament to probably the action everywhere else, actually. So the fact that he wasn't on it is a sort of testament to the skill, and I think, you know, maybe redeemed some of his reputation of being someone who's just there because his dad's there. But you know, I think that if anything, that it shouldn't really come as a surprise, bearing in mind Lance Stroll's always been fairly good in the wet, when he's maybe not on other more favourable conditions.
Pretty good at street circuits too, as well, often. And we do talk about how good he is sometimes at the whole kind of the point squirt turn type corners. And yeah, he left a lot of the defending to his teammate behind him, who was doing a great rearguard action. But we'll get to him in a little bit. As next, Tom, we got your guy, Max Verstappen. Started 8th, finished 7th when Alonso retired. Proof you can't overtake in Singapore, right?
Do you want to get slapped or not? No. Max, oh God alive, what a day.
Phenomenal overtaking, though. In fairness, props to him. Best overtaker on track today, without a doubt.
Yeah, but he put himself in the position where he needed to make these moves, because he had an awful start. He borderline hit anti-stall, dropped to 12th, got questioned at the start of the race because like he gained the track and made an advantage. I think they put that down to him being the first lap and him probably trying to avoid contact. Did put in some brilliant moves. Yeah, absolutely put in some fantastic moves. You know, if even that move he put in on Vettel right at the end, super overtake. You know, he just you know, that time he actually managed to stamp on the brakes without locking up. You know, but he, you know, he just made a couple of almost rookie errors. And in my head, I was thinking, just ease off a bit. You know, it's like you're going to win the world championship this year. So it's not, you know, it's not make or break. It's not like you need to make this corner or you're not going to win the championship. So, you know, so in my head, I was thinking, you know, just back off, just take the points. Don't do anything daft, which is exactly what he did. But today, and I think the weekend as a whole, just a bit of a weekend to forget for him, not the kind of 21st birthday he probably had in mind. If anybody voted him driver of the day, I mean, you need to have a look at yourself, because that was not the performance of a driver of the day. You know, people might go, "Oh, well, he made a load of overtakes." Yes, but he put himself in a position where he needed to make the overtakes. So, you know, it wasn't a particularly rounded performance. It was like a sort of pre-2018 Max performance, where quali wasn't great. He got into scraps and you know, pulled off some great moves, but then locked up and, you know, this and that and all the rest of it. He probably started to get a bit frustrated because of what happened in quali yesterday, when he didn't have enough fuel to finish the final run, or finish it, but, you know, the penalty, all the rest of it. Mm. So there was definitely an element of frustration in that sense. So the moves he did were good, but it was just very scrappy and inconsistent from him today.
I still love him though.
Oh
yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, for you, but I mean, an inconsistent performance, but still a seventh place when you flat spotted your tyres and had to go right to last place. Granted, only for a couple of seconds because of George Russell puncture and various other reasons as well. But the fact that we've not long left to go in the race, he was last and he has recovered to seventh on a track that you can't overtake, does underline his overall strength. So I can see why some people would put him as driver of the day. I personally wouldn't, because my criteria is you have to have effectively a faultless race to be considered for driver of the day. So absolutely not. Was he actually voted driver of the day, or I haven't actually seen?
No, it was Perez.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And rightly so in my eyes.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll get to that later on. But Sebastian Vettel in eighth place will be disappointed by losing that seventh place right at the end, especially after defending off Hamilton for so long and succeeding eventually in that, but losing it to Verstappen on the last lap. I mean, he's going to be disappointed with that, and to be comprehensively beaten by Lance Stroll as well over the course of the race.
I'm not sure how Sebastian Vettel really cares at this point. I think he's proved all he's got to prove, and he's just seeing out the last few races. That said, he clearly cares enough to, you know, really. I wouldn't say Lewis Hamilton had definitely the faster car, but Lewis Hamilton could not get by. Just could not get by whatsoever, and when he did try it, you know, in a way that probably wasn't on, it must be said, you know, he just kept getting on with it and just waited and carried on with his race, and was, you know, sort of very unfortunately for him at least overtaken by Max Verstappen. Then again, Max Verstappen had soft tyres and is in a clearly faster Red Bull, and is that bit younger. So I don't think it's any surprise that he got overtaken. And I don't think he should be sort of kicking himself over that, because it was a very good race for him, and, you know, got up to from 13th place up to 8th. That's a good set of, you know, it's a decent set of points for where they are in the constructors. And he's just doing the job. I think it comes down to the fact that you can still see that he's got the skill there to do that. Bearing in mind that, you know, very very well fended off Lewis Hamilton, who was probably that bit faster.
Yeah, absolutely. Hamilton was definitely in the faster car in that scenario. And then obviously he had Verstappen behind him in an even quicker car on softer tyres. So where have we seen that before? But we'll move on to Lewis Hamilton next, Tom. And he was looking strong for a podium, and despite losing that place to Sainz right at the start. But very similar race to Max, really. And, you know, rare mistakes from Hamilton, and not just one as well. It's we're just not used to seeing this side of Lewis Hamilton, and he's only really got himself to blame.
Yeah, you know, he did make a couple of sort of again rookie errors, like we said about Max and several drivers on the grid today. I do wonder if there's an element of it being we haven't raced in Singapore for 2 years, and it's like I said earlier, it's such a demanding track, you know, physically and mentally. I wonder if people sort of forgot or perhaps underestimated it a bit, and. You know, it sort of like took its toll on the drivers a bit, which is understandable, especially given we had the hour delays, that they'd all be sort of mentally prepared for it to start at 1 p.m. UK time, and then it actually kicked off at just gone 2 p.m. UK. You know, so there are a lot of variables at play. Hamilton, you just, it was that one for me, not so much when he slid into the wall and damaged his front wing. I'll get onto that one in a minute. It was the one towards the end where it was Vettel himself and Max behind, and he just completely missed his breaking point and just went completely deep and just opened up the door. It was just like a basic error. I don't know if he snatched at the brakes or if he missed his braking spot or if he went to lock up and missed or missed his braking spot then or whatever, but. Yeah, it was just an odd mistake, and not one that you associate with a driver of the caliber of Hamilton. The other incident of his that I want to sort of touch upon a bit, and I know I mentioned this in the live chat when we were chatting when the race was going on, is the first one where when he went into the wall and broke his front wing. Okay, yeah, he did go into the front. He did go into the wall. Obviously you can't deny that or whatever. We all saw it happen. However, I think his experience and his skill came into play here. And if people are listening going, Tom, what the hell are you going on about? Bear with me. We saw other drivers go into the wall. For example, Albon completely lost his front wing, you know, completely destroyed. You know, had to limp back round with no front wing, effectively. He had a sort of front structure that other than nose cone, and that was about it. Hamilton, he damaged his front left end plane, I think it was, or maybe he had a bit of damage, and it was sparking, yes, because he was hanging loose. But because he'd obviously realised that he wasn't going to make the corner, and instead of doing what Kvyat did in 2017, where he just kept his foot going and kept turning the wheel and just sort of went, hey ho, I'm in the wall now, tee hee, lols. He steered so that because he knew he would hit it straight on, he knew that his front wing would take the brunt of the impact. And to an extent, it is a consumable part. So he knew that if he broke that, yeah, he could go back to the pits. In Singapore, odds are there'd be a safety car. You know, we had a few VSCs, all the rest of it. He knew he'd be able to get back to the pits, maybe put new set of tyres on, change the front wing. My point is, he avoided suspension damage, so he avoided the need having to DNF. If you look at Albon had to DNF because even though he hit the wall, you know, he had suspension damage. Latifi, when he had his, when he had his clobber with Zhou Guanyu, he had to retire because although he had a puncture, he also had suspension damage. So that's what I mean when I say like the skill and the sort of mindset of people like Hamilton and Max, and you could put Alonso and Leclerc in there, is when they have these things, when they hit the wall like that, or they sort of have incidents, it's amazing that they have the mindset to crash into the wall in a certain way that it causes as little damage as possible.
It's an interesting take. I liken it to when you drop your toast and having the skill to make it so it lands butter side up. You still drop your toast at the end of the day. So, but I get your point, and I just think we just expect more from Lewis Hamilton. But in the same way that people praise Fernando Alonso for driving slowly really well, I'm not going to praise Lewis Hamilton for crashing well. But even so, we'll move on to Pierre Gasly. Got the last point in the race today. He did a good job for Red Bull by jumping out of the way of Max at every opportunity. 10th place, Owain. Is that, I mean, considering what his teammate got up to, is that a good return for AlphaTauri, or is that just, or is it another disappointing day?
You'd take a point over a over the bill to repair two front wishbones and a front nose cone.
Without that, yeah.
Yeah. Then again, he started 7th. I don't know really how he ended up that far down. Obviously he lost a place to Max Verstappen. Because of course he did. But he's sort of been the person who's unfortunately leveled out the reason that there's people that have, you know, started behind him and ended up in front. I don't know how he quite got. I don't know if he got a sort of bad luck on a safety car or was the timing was just wrong for him with how the race played out. But I don't think he did anything obviously wrong, but he just wasn't really quick enough. I mean, you know, he's for the most part, a lot of people apart from the front runners are separated by maybe 3 or 4 seconds. He's a good sort of 8 seconds away from Lewis Hamilton, and Lewis Hamilton didn't exactly have the best final few laps. So I think it's just a, you know, it's fine. It's fine, but you got to be disappointed that when you're losing 3 places and that's where you finish the race at, scraping up the last point.
Yeah, especially in those conditions, and you see the drivers that finished behind him that started ahead of him, and then he's lost those places to other cars as well. It's an odd one, really, and I just think maybe that AlphaTauri is just not in a place where it's raceable. I don't know. It just doesn't seem to be anything about it, to the point where when I was doing the preview for this show, I completely forgot to put AlphaTauri in the preview and had to busk it on the fly. So, because I just completely forgot they were even there. They've turned into Sauber for me. It's just kind of a bit of a nothing team at the moment, and I don't think there's a lot that Gasly can do in that car anyway. But if the rumours are true, he's not going to be there for much longer anyway. So he may actually be able to start proving that he can defend against Max Verstappen in future. You never know. But moving on to the first of the non-finishers then, Valtteri Bottas then, Tom, rolled the dice on softs, first person to do that. But given there are only 14 finishers and he's in an Alfa Romeo, 11th place, not really good enough, in my opinion. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, not good enough at all. It's just, you know, he was unfortunate in that Russell did his absolute best to try and take him out. And I mean, I can't think if those two ever had to come together in the wet before when they've been talking about the second Mercedes seat. It rings a bell somewhere, but I can't think where.
Don't talk about it.
It's never happened. Don't know what you're talking about.
Like Abu Dhabi never happened.
Wasn't in wet, dry conditions either.
Too soon. That was in wet conditions. Bottas is P11, sort of just nowhere. He had a big gap. I'm looking at the timesheets here. He was nearly 20 seconds behind Gasly as well. So it's just like, what are you playing at? Didn't have a very good top speed. Didn't have a very good fastest lap. Excuse me, I do apologise. Just not a good day at the office. And I'd say his teammate has arguably got the better of him by this point. Bottas, I don't know, he's sort of just sort of fading into obscurity. You know, I thought he was going to go on for a good season this year. And the start of the season, I think we all thought that when Alfa Romeo looked to be better than Mercedes. And it's just like, yeah, that's flipped on his head, doesn't it? I think Bottas was a bit unlucky in some aspects today, but he just doesn't have the pace. And I think when people were saying at Mercedes, like, oh, he hasn't got the pace, this is what they were talking about. It's just, you know, just when things are like really going his way, like when the setup is just so and everything is absolute chef's kiss, you know, he's there. But you can say that about most drivers, you know, most decent drivers, put them in a very good car with the right setup and they'll go quick. But the best drivers will take not particularly good cars or middling cars and drag them towards the top of the field. And that's what he can't do. And I think he's proved that today.
Yeah, I think Alfa Romeo, they absolutely aced the regulations when it came to chassis weight and everything at the start of the season. But once everyone managed to get their summer weight off and were able to attack the track a bit more with lighter chassis, they just haven't been able to bring updates to the car, and everyone else has overtaken them. So yeah, it's very much a making hay while the sun shines for Bottas. And I have to say, I think you're right in that I still don't rate Zhou as a long-term, you know, huge prospect for Formula One, but I do think that he's getting closer to Bottas. And, you know, if the start of the season Alfa Romeo had the car they have now, then maybe you'd see Zhou a lot closer to Bottas than we are now. Certainly the average qualifying deficit has come down. But going on to Kevin Magnussen then, Owen, yet again, another early race incident compromising his race. He's making a bit of a habit out of it. Is this compromising Haas's potential points now, or do you just see it as aggressive driving?
I mean, undoubtedly it's impacting their potential points. An issue at the start is, statistically speaking, when it's most likely to be damaging. You know, you can lose far more places for, let's say, a 2 second incident at the start of the race and at the end. And you look at the raw numbers, start position and finish position, and he's gone from ninth, where you'd pick up 2 points, potentially one for the fastest lap. And he's gone down to 12th. I don't think that everything's entirely his fault. I think he did get caught up a little bit. Unfortunately, I didn't see the incident with Max Verstappen, I believe it was. But, you know, something to be said for Max Verstappen shouldn't be in the same area of the track. And if he'd got away well, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. But I think there's a certain amount to be said for Kevin Magnussen isn't a rookie. He's definitely been around the block a few times. He knows how to handle a race car. You know, it's uncharacteristic, and it's the sort of thing you'd expect from his teammate, not him. The fact that he's, you know, finished scarcely above his teammate is, you know, I think it's kind of it's indicative of how poor of a day he's had. Hopefully it's just a one-off. In sort of a bit of a weird day.
Yeah, and we'll move on to his teammate next as well. But with only 4 cars finished outside of the points today, and 2 of them were Haas's, so they can't be happy with that at all. And it looked going into this race like it might have been a decent race for Haas, given the nature of the circuit, Tom. But I think maybe just both drivers and the team not reading the conditions well. Is this Haas not being operationally sharp, or did they just need better drivers?
I think they need a better driver in one of the seats, and it's not the main seat. Cryptic as ever, I know. This is a race where Haas needed to get points, and it was the kind of race where you'd have wanted them to get points because there were only a handful of drivers who didn't finish, like we said. And for it to be both of the drivers who didn't finish today, that's not good enough. If they want to sort of continue this upward trajectory that they are apparently on, then they need to get better results than this. You know, it was a bit of a mess today. Quali wasn't great. They left it very late to actually get out of Q1. Well, certainly K-Mag did. Then again, say K-Mag black and white flag for ruining his front wing. I didn't see anything of him other than when George Russell was behind him, he sounded like an entitled little insert expletive here. It's just... Yeah, just was just they've overpromised and underdelivered, and it's everything's just a bit half baked out. I think it's still a transition year for them. I think it's like Ferrari 2021, where they had the real dog of the year, which was the year before, and then next year hopefully they'll come out a bit more swinging.
Yeah, it's certainly started well for them, but eighth place is going to be hard to hold on to now. AlphaTauri now level on points of them. They're just ahead due to some better finishes. So it looks like ninth place is beckoning for Haas, which overall, when you look at how they started, you would have thought they'd have been on for a good season. I remember some media outlets saying that they predicted Haas may even grab a podium at some point this season, and it just seems to have gone backwards very quickly, and there's a mixture of driver squandering results and teams just not moving forwards, which is a bit of a shame. But moving on to the final finisher, and from the guy who always finishes in the top five when he finishes, he's the last guy to cross the line today. I think, for me, I mean, is this partially down to the team? Are they, I mean, the decision to start him at the back on the track where you can't overtake? I know he put himself there by qualifying 11th, but did they turn him into a bit of a guinea pig towards the end there when they just stopped him very early for the softs, or was this just Russell not reading the race well?
It would help if I wasn't an idiot and knew how to unmute. I don't know who made the decision to go to slicks that early. I think Martin Brundle called it quite well on the commentary as this was all playing out before the race really kicked off. There wasn't a right tire for the time. There wasn't, you couldn't have gone, obviously a bit later, but you couldn't have gone to a brand new Inter, and you couldn't go to a slick. But the ones that the worn Inters weren't exactly amazing. I think based on the race we had, in hindsight, George Russell being put to the back wasn't the worst thing to have happened in the world. I think a lot of the things after that didn't necessarily reflect well on George Russell. I did take his point that, he was good data for the team, but I don't think that necessarily helped Hamilton, for example. If anything, it more helped everyone else. So I don't think it's awful, but I think there needs to be a bit of a debrief there, because that's really not been George Russell's strongest weekend by any stretch of the imagination. And I think it sort of needs to be something to look at and something to learn from, because they could have really got something out of this, even from that far on the grid. But all that's happened is that, he's finished last of the people who did, two laps down. I don't think he even stole the fastest lap point. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, he did take the fastest lap, but he didn't obviously get the point for it, because he's outside the top 10.
Of course. Yeah. So, the only thing he's taken a point away from is, and I think Perez had yeah, fast, Perez or Verstappen had it, or were,
I believe it was Perez who had, yeah, it at the time.
Yeah, I think Perez. Yeah, obviously Verstappen peaked off obviously once he hit sort of more difficult traffic. I don't know. It just seems like a bit of a, they've really fired a blank this weekend, because all they've ended up doing is putting 57 laps on a brand new engine that they could have kept in the pool if they'd, maybe seen it for what it was. Maybe that's a bit defeatist, but that's the long and the short of it when everything's totted up at the end of today.
Yeah, it's definitely his most uninspiring race of the season, I would say. But the only solace you can really take is that his if he's going for the whole teammate battle thing, then his teammate didn't score very well. I'm sure he'll play the party line and say, it's bad result for the team, just 2 points is, it's bad for the team and all that. But I think deep down he's doing a bit of a fist bump underneath his overalls there. But moving on to Yuki Tsunoda then, he kind of caused everything to kick off on lap 36 by just banzaiing it into the barrier, just probably twice the speed that Hamilton did, which would certainly, at least he did go ahead on as well, but I don't think anything would have stopped that causing suspension damage, Tom. But we didn't really see a lot from him again. He was squirreling around quite a bit. We saw he was going sideways quite a few times, and just not really. I think the fact that he's finished 15th and was the sixth person to retire is probably a good result for him based on what it looked like he was going to do in the early stages of the race.
Yeah, I mean, Yuki just, oh God, what's he even playing at now, man? You know, he just decided to absolutely bomb it into the wall, and it was, yeah, just that was the only thing I saw of him, and he was just, I saw him coming towards that turn, and he was just, he was coming in full tilt, and I was just like, yeah, he's not going to make it, you're not going to make it, and then it's like banging, so just thinking, yeah, I told you so. Just stupid, petulant, really. I don't know if it was a lapse of concentration or if it was just immaturity or what, but he, yeah, just not his day at the office, I think it's fair to say. I didn't really see an awful lot else of him in the race. I'm not really sure what he did, aside from prang it into the wall. You know, it was, yeah, it was just an odd race from him, and it was like the Yuki of like the start of last year. The only thing we missed was a full effing and blinding team radio, really.
Yeah, he's got a shining new contract, so at least he doesn't have to worry about, you know, not being in F1 next year. But he certainly needs to make a step next year. And if Gasly is the one who is going to be moving on, then he needs to step into that team leader role and assert himself. Because certainly, if a rookie comes in and beats him, it will be his last contract in Formula One. I'm sure of that. But someone who definitely does have at least another year on his contract, I believe it's still got two more after this year, I mean, it's Esteban Ocon. Again, somebody we didn't see a lot from in the race. His engine blew up and quite spectacularly, and then he just parked it in a very, very awkward position to cause the VSC. But again, all we really saw of him, and it was just kind of a bit of a pop. I think, was it Ruby in the chat just said, oh, his engine went poof. And that's basically his race in a few words.
Yeah, that's that engine's only going to be useful as a coffee table now. I don't think it really didn't sound great from the onboard, and which is saying something, bearing in mind the Alpine also doesn't sound great when it's running correctly.
Shots fired.
It's awful. That high pitched whine, I can't deal with it. No, it's.
Is Cyril Abissable still there? I thought that was him.
Yeah, I don't know. He was doing well up until he wasn't doing terribly until everything obviously went bang. I don't think there's actually much more he could, like, you know, talking about obviously where he parked it. I don't think there's much more he could have done. I think that was it. That was all she wrote, really. And it's yet again, I think the bigger issue here is, because I know we're going to talk about it with Alonso, is that Alpine has managed to cut, like, they've really never got on top, I don't think, of these turbo hybrids, not fully, not in the way that even Honda managed to really get their head around it and stop having, or at least, you know, minimize the amount of failures we're seeing. But the Alpine really sticks in my mind, and it doesn't help now that they've got even fewer things to test on, even fewer cars to test on. But they just really have not, they'll be waiting for 2026, because it's yet again cost them points in a very contentious battle. You know, and if they lose by however many points they've lost they've lost as a result of this, I think they've only got themselves to blame. There's really not the tools for the job for the drivers at this point.
Yeah, and like you say, I'm sure we'll touch on that a bit more when we get to Alonso as well. But moving on to Alex Albon, Tom, the one driver for me gets a pass this weekend on a bad performance, and if it is indeed a bad performance, but a brave, brave return for him after what was, you know, a fairly routine operation. Potentially, he could have lost his life, and I mean, the retirement there, it looked like the car was okay. Surely it was just a precaution, really, and just kind of get through the race, save the parts, and give him a pass for the race. What's your thoughts on that?
2 weeks ago, Alex Albon was in a medically induced coma on a ventilator, and today he is racing in Singapore. That tells you all you need to know about the mindset and the determination of these drivers. Having said that, I stand by what I said last week and a few weeks ago. Albon should have taken the weekend off. He should have let De Vries, or whoever, probably De Vries, run in the car again this weekend. I'm going to probably repeat myself a bit from things I've said in a few weeks gone by. It's one thing to recover from an operation where you feel you can do a few bits around the house. It's another thing to fly halfway across the world, strap yourself into, you know, into the pinnacle of single-seater motorsport and drive one of the most demanding circuits in some of the most demanding conditions that we see on the calendar. I find it hard to believe that he was recovered in time, because no amount of medical insurance or physiotherapy can get you fully back to where you were. Sometimes your body just needs to rest and recover. And I think for these two double headers, he should have done that. I get he wants to be back in the car, and well, I get he wanted to be back in the car, but I think what we saw today was almost evidence that he wasn't quite ready to jump back in. Even if he'd have left it this weekend and jumped back in for Suzuka, I would have understood that more, or sort of perhaps said that was a better idea. But you had to give him massive credit for even having the cojones to actually do it this weekend in the first place, given you know, at one point he was on death's door.
Yeah, as I said before in my pre-speech, they're just absolutely gets a complete pass today, whatever happens. Any mistakes he made, completely forgiven. It's just an absolutely brave return. And I'm glad that he's back. But yeah, just rest up, get yourself ready for the run-in, and put your health first, because your health's got to come first in that scenario. And truly a superman to even attempt that race, to be honest. But going back for some more Alpine Renault engine hate, we'll go with Alonso. 350th race, defended like a lion until that Renault engine gave up. I was quite impressed that he was able to keep Verstappen behind for so long, and quite disappointed to see that engine blow up in the end. But we didn't really see him for that long in the race. But how do you rate Alonso's race? And are you going to get any more hate towards Renault for today?
Oh yeah, I've got another one. Cool. I think honestly, Alpine management will be glad that the French Grand Prix has already happened, so that they don't have to hear Fernando Alonso shouting about a GP2 engine in their own backyard. Fernando Alonso, there's a reason they put in the big bucks, because he was very successfully keeping Max Verstappen behind him. For, you know, not just one, not just two laps, like a decent set of laps, and really was halting his progress to the point it was called out upon by, I think, everyone who watched. Other than that, you know, I don't think Fernando Alonso was driving in a way that was sort of negatively impacting the engine itself, other than driving it. So, you know, who knows what could happen? He was sitting in sixth at that point. Who knows what could have happened if they'd managed to if Alpine had managed to build an engine that doesn't go bang. I don't think it was necessarily the engine itself. I can't remember how that one failed. Either way, it's cost them probably a lot of points, and again it's in that battle with McLaren, it's getting tight, and they may rue that they didn't get the 8 points that they could have, that would have kept them ahead of McLaren in this race. So, I hope it works out for them, but they've really got only themselves to blame after, you know, some really good performances from both their drivers.
Yeah, it seems odd that the performances we've seen from Alonso and the bad luck he's had, and how, really, I have to say, he's been quite anonymous this year, Esteban Ocon. It looks like the performances have been nowhere near, and yet you look at Fernando Alonso on 59 points and Ocon on 66. Given how bad Ricciardo has been and how good that car has been, the fact that McLaren are now ahead, you can only really blame the team and potentially Esteban Ocon for that. This has been his most impressive year since his return, and probably since those last couple, that year at Ferrari, where effectively he just dragged that car over the line every week trying to win the championship. Was it either 2010 or 2012?
2012.
Those 2 years were just phenomenal years, and I think this is his most impressive year since then. I've been fully turned around on him as a performer, and Aston Aston Martin are getting a hell of a driver for at least a year or two anyway, until he eventually gets to that cliff. If he does, you never know, he might keep going till he's 50. Could be the next Fangio. But we'll move on now, Tom, to Nicholas Latifi. I've just seen on the Twitters that he's got a 5-place grid drop for the next race for his collision with Zhou, and a very unspectacular climax to a very unsuccessful Formula One career, just kind of ticking down race by race now. Any other comments, or have you any response or any defence for Latifi's performance today?
There's no defending that. Or do you see him? Mate, you've got mirrors. You absolute sausage. you've been in F3 seasons. You're battling to overtake him. He's going, oh my God, I didn't see him. Oh God, give me a break. Just get out of F1. You're a nice guy, but you're not good enough. That's it.
Nice. Okay. So I'll move on to Guan Yu Zhou then. Or Zhou Guan Yu, I beg your pardon. I can never get that the right way around. I have no idea how you're supposed to do it. But either way, Zhou, the first retirement, obviously nothing he could have done. We've already spoken a little bit about him earlier in the race about his performances, and a good start to the weekend, getting that new deal. But a very early end to his race and the bottom of the timesheets through no fault of his own.
Yeah, he started 14th as well. I mean, there's a little bit to be said about how Latifi was even in the same section of track as to be affecting Zhou Guan Yu. I'm going to go back to Latifi. You can't claim that you didn't see him when Max Verstappen was talking about a rip-off in his rear brake duct.
Transparent plastic that he could see from his tiny mirror. Yeah,
exactly. A small piece of plastic that's fluttering around in something that's very low in the car, rather than something that's white and red and is moving about in your rear, possibly sparking away. I don't know what Latifi's going on about there. Zhou Guan Yu, on the other hand, what could he have done? He was just trying to get through, and unfortunately he's been tagged by someone who probably shouldn't be there anymore. Other than that, it was a decent enough qualifying performance for him. And into the race, unfortunately, he's just not had a chance to even do anything with it. And bearing in mind that, his teammates started behind him and ended up in 11th, you can only sort of, if we extrapolate that, I know it's obviously not a perfect comparison, but if we extrapolate that, he could have actually done quite well. A disappointing day for him, but not his fault.
I do vaguely remember him having a little moment in one of the runoffs, which is why he was behind Latifi. I think I could be wrong in that, but I think that's the only real reason he would have been behind him at that point, given his somewhat loftier starting position to that. So that kind of rounds up the full drivers, the grid of 20 drivers. So out of those 20 drivers then, Tom, I'll come to you first. Who are you going to give driver of the day? I think I've got a slight suspicion of who it might be.
It's got to be Perez. Light stuff like victory, held off Leclerc, adapted to the circumstances, looked pretty comfortable out front. A couple of lockups when Leclerc was handling him, but held off Leclerc, had faith in the team, faith in the car, faith in himself. Just exemplary drive from him today.
Okay. Owen, any upgrades on that?
I won't give it to Sergio Perez, but only because Tom has. To be honest, that's the only reason. I think... I'm in two minds about it, but I'm going to go with Lando Norris. I think didn't mess up at all. Got himself in a decent position. Really dragged out a great performance because he didn't make the kind of mistakes that the people who probably should have been in front of him did make. I think that's the biggest thing. It was a day when, if you wanted to be up there, you needed to not make mistakes, and that's exactly what Lando Norris did.
Nice. And just to complete the trio of diversity, I'm going to go with someone completely different as well. I'm going to actually go with Daniel Ricciardo. It's about time he got some love. He gained 11 positions. He was right up there with Norris. I think going to the soft tyres, the tyres seemed to give up a little bit and he dropped away a little bit. But I've seen dotted around some rumours that he was told the whole station behind Lando. So the fact that he'd actually got up behind Lando in a race when he started in 16th, when Lando was 10 places ahead of him. I think that's a solid performance from him. So for once, he's going to get some love for me. Someone sign him up. Come on, Williams, sign him up. You've got a drive there. Come on, you'll get him on the cheap. So I'm gonna go for Daniel Ricciardo then. So I'm going to give you guys a chance just to plug your social handles or whatever you want to do. So Tom, where can people hear more from you?
Well, I co-host Good Talk alongside your lovely dashing self. I'm definitely the number two driver out of the Toms on Grid Talk. Yeah, so you can find us at FromChronicle.com. I believe we are.
Yes, we are.
And obviously, if you're listening to this and or watching this, you can find us on all your YouTubing platforms. No, your podcasting platforms.
And YouTube.
Yeah, I just got my words wrong way around.
And Owain, where can people see more from you?
If you want to see me tweet, I'm available at Owain Medford on Twitter. That's the best place to get my opinions. I don't tweet them a lot, but when I do...
They're worth hearing.
Probably not even then. They're worth going, what is this guy on about? And that's it.
And I'm at Tom Horrocks F1, and you can also catch me on the Monkey Suit podcast when we eventually get around to actually doing a podcast. We weren't able to do one after the last race, but hopefully we're going to be back next week. So if you want to hear more from Grid Talk, however, we do have a huge back catalogue of shows. There's more than just race reviews and previews on there. We've also got some fireside episodes where we have chats with people from in and around F1 and other interesting guests as well. We've got a nice one coming up soon, actually. Tom, do you want to give a spoiler for that one?
Yeah, so in my line of work, one of our biggest clients is Cosworth, the engine manufacturer. Obviously, being an F1, you know, in and out in different capacities over the years, and you know, obviously have a big, you know, they're very, very well known. So their head of IT has been the best part of 40 years, and he and I get on very well. So I've asked him to do a fireside episode where we will have a bit of a dive into the history of Cosworth. So that'll be recorded in the next few weeks.
Nice. I cannot wait to hear that one. So we also, as I said, already said, we do our race shows, and they go out live on YouTube, and you can go into the comments and leave us a question, and we'll attempt to answer that in the post show. We're also available on audio formats on Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, Omni Studio, and Pocket Casts, and I'm sure we're available in a few other places as well. So just look for us by searching for F1 Chronicle. We do also run a Patreon, so if you want to help us contribute to doing what we do, please consider donating to us, and everything that we do earn from that does go back into the show to improve the experience that you, the fan, gets. You can support us by buying merchandise as well from f1chronicle.com/store. And we will be back tomorrow, so there's not long to wait. We'll be previewing the Japanese Grand Prix. So until then, we will see you then. Thank you and goodbye.